Family estrangement. It is the physical or emotional distancing between two family members. It's cutting off contact, and it doesn't happen overnight. There's a history, there is a backstory as to how a relationship disintegrates over time. We're exploring family estrangement this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Christina Sharp is an assistant professor of communication studies at Utah State University in Logan. She directs the Family Communication and Relationships Lab. Her recent journal article published in Communication Research is titled, "You're Not Welcome Here, A Grounded Theory of Family Distancing." She was recently quoted in a New York Times article called "Debunking Myths About Estrangement." Christina, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
When does someone know they've reached the threshold, the level of estrangement with a loved one? What qualifies as estrangement?
So the way I conceptualize estrangement is when at least one family member is voluntarily and intentionally distancing themselves from another member because of an ongoing negative relationship.
Go ahead.
So
yeah.
I was going to say, I use this definition to differentiate estrangement from things like a third party who might influence a family relationship, like if a family member was incarcerated, or something like adoption, where a birth mother gives up her child, obviously not for a negative relationship. So it has to be intentional, and it has to be because something really bad is going on.
So intentional, something quite bad. What are some characteristics, what are some common warning signs that this could lead to estrangement, this relationship?
So typically, people, it's not like you're going to see necessarily a warning sign. Typically, something extremely bad is happening in the relationship, some sort of physical, psychological, emotional abuse. Some gross neglect, someone in the family is in danger, or someone's behaving in a really unsafe way. So it doesn't, from my research, it doesn't really appear to be, we just got in a fight and then we became estranged. It's usually something extremely severe.
So it's not a single blowout. It's not this really bad thing that just went down between a family member. It grows over time?
Likely. Every once in a while, sometimes people talk about a last straw event.
Mm.
But more often, people come to some sort of internal realization that they no longer can sustain that relationship.
Is this a temporary thing, or is this permanent? And how long does this distance usually last in your studying this?
So it depends. So every family is going to be different. Sometimes people create distance and then are able to maintain it in a way that the estrangement is continuous. But more often, people engage in an on-again, off-again relationship where they're together for a little while, then apart. And this could last for decades. So it just depends. There's certainly different paths, I guess, to estrangement, one being more continuous and one being a little bit more chaotic.
And this on again, off again, what is happening there? Why is the relationship mending for a while and then disintegrating again?
I think often the reason why people go back to their family relationship is that they're experiencing some sort of pressure. So either external pressure from other family members or network members about reconciling, or even an internal feeling that they should be with their family. And so a lot of people try again, but the reason why they became estranged in the first place is still present. So those potentially really negative ongoing behaviors haven't changed.
You said in a piece, I believe, you wouldn't ask someone to go back to an abusive relationship, but there are pressures from family members who say, you know what, try this relationship just one more time. Is there that going on?
So it's really interesting to me. I in my research, this comes up quite a bit, that people social network members put a lot of pressure on people to reconcile. And one of the reasons might be that they have no idea why the person created distance in the first place. So they might not even know that they created distance because of some sort of sexual abuse, because the person isn't telling them. Another reason is that in our culture, families are considered non-voluntary, like these lifelong relationships that we feel no viable choice but to maintain.
Mm.
And so when social network members hear about family estrangement, they often think that it's some combination of being really sad and really bad, even though estrangement potentially can be a healthy solution to an unhealthy environment.
Christina Sharp is with us. She is an assistant professor of communication studies at Utah State University. Her research is in the area of family estrangement. She has a journal article that is titled, You're Not Welcome Here, A Grounded Theory of Family Distancing. You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you ever intentionally distanced yourself from your parents or other family members? Why did this occur? What do you understand now about this relationship that you have created this disconnect, that you've cut off a relationship? Join in the conversation with your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Christina, you study this. Is there a stigma associated with talking about or reporting estrangement?
I think so. According to my participants, people really didn't want to talk about it. And this might be, for one reason, because it's because families are perceived in a particular way in our culture. But another reason is that they just didn't want to tell people why they were estranged. Because often it's very, very personal, and people don't want to disclose, like, the either mental health issues or the drug and alcohol abuse or the other types of abuse that were happening in their family.
But they're not alone. Do you have data that shows just how often this occurs?
So there's no official statistics like there is around divorce, but there's been a couple studies recently that estimate that parent-child estrangement is anywhere around 12% to about 25%. So it's very, very common, even though people aren't talking about it.
Is it possible that estrangement could be classified as a symptom of dysfunctional families, or is this something that all of us have experiences with at some point in our lives?
I'm reluctant to say that all dysfunctional families
go down this path.
Mm-hmm. But certainly, if you consider an extremely ongoing negative relationship dysfunctional, then I would say yes.
Mm.
But I think that estrangement could occur in any family. Potentially. Things are always changing, and families are so dynamic, and we consider them systems, right? So what's happening to one family member is influencing the experiences of the other family members. So even if a family is somewhat happy, and maybe a new in-law comes into the picture, or someone develops some sort of problem with a substance abuse problem, things can change very quickly.
So when there is this moving about in flux in families, how do you go about studying family estrangement?
So to date, all of the research has been qualitative in terms of people sharing their stories with researchers, sharing their experiences, so we can come to a better conclusion about what estrangement is, what estrangement is not, what uncertainties people have about estrangement, how they manage information around it, and how the meanings of family change when this is a part of your everyday life.
In 2014, British adults were surveyed about family estrangement. Among about 2,000 respondents, 8% said that they had cut off a family member. That translates to more than 5 million people. We're discussing family estrangement this hour with Christina Sharp. She studies it at Utah State University, where she's an assistant professor of communication studies. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you ever intentionally distanced yourself from your parent or other family members? Why did you do this? Are you a relative who has experienced estrangement from another loved one? How does this feel? 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll return after a news update. In a 2015 study in the journal Australian Social Work, 26 adults reported being estranged from parents for three main reasons: abuse, betrayal, and poor parenting, and/or a combination of those three. We're exploring family estrangement, how it happens, and where do families go from here? It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Utah State University Communication Studies Professor Christina Sharp stays with us. She studies family estrangement. You can join in the conversation. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. How has estrangement impacted you and your family? How would you prefer things to be? Join in, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Shelley in Whitewater. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
Go ahead.
It's actually Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y.
Oh, I'm sorry. Kelly, yeah, go ahead.
That's okay. I left my stepmom for a good 20 years. But I finally came back.
What led you back, Kelly?
Just jealousy.
What do you mean?
I was jealous of my stepmom, but, you know, she took my, well, kind of took my dad away from me.
Christina, your reaction?
I think that, you know, people's experiences obviously can change over time, and sometimes people need distance to feel closer, which is, it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but sometimes in order to grow and see a different perspective, sometimes people just need a little time apart.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Marie in Burlington. Hi, Marie.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that I was married for 23 years, so I did know my husband's family very well. And he ended up committing suicide by hanging, and he did it on our daughter's 16th birthday, as well as Thanksgiving. And his family at the memorial had said that they would stand by us and be there for us, but they turned their back on us, and they haven't had anything to do with us. And I guess I've always wondered exactly what happened with the way they dealt with their grief, or their maybe they felt that there was shame involved in all of that, and I guess I just don't understand how a family could do that after such a tragedy.
Marie, thank you for bringing that to the conversation. Christina, go ahead.
Well, first I want to say I'm so sorry that that has been your experience. And I wish I had a more satisfying answer, but people behave in ways that might not make any sense to us all the time. And without me talking to them, I don't think I can provide you any satisfying insight as to what was going on with your husband's family, other than to say that certainly grief and negative emotions really
influence our behaviors and our cognitions. And we might end up doing things we wouldn't have otherwise.
So how does grief build when you are estranged?
In what regard?
In the regard that, would it influence you to try to make amends at all? Or is this grief something that grows inside? And then what happens?
So I haven't conducted research on this specifically, but I imagine that grief can create either situation. So when there's grief, there's sadness, right? And there's fear of loss again. And certainly fear can make us like approach a difficult topic. It also can make us flee. So whether people respond, I mean, I think it's absolutely possible that people could respond in either way.
Marie, thank you so much for that call. There are misconceptions, Christina, that you talk about in the New York Times article about estrangement and why it's so widely misunderstood. What are some of those things that we really don't understand that we need to know about family estrangement?
I think one of the first ones is that estrangement isn't inherently bad. Sometimes family members need to have distance because they're in an unhealthy environment. And oftentimes I think we think of estrangement as unilateral, meaning that one person wants it and the other person doesn't. But estrangement can also be bilateral, where both people feel they need distance from a toxic relationship.
Have you come across those in your studies? Have you come across those relationships where both parties say, look, this is for the best?
So that is a complicated question because, I mean, maybe one day we'll be able to figure this out, but right now we haven't figured out how to have dyads. So both the parent and the child of the same relationship, because they're estranged,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's very difficult to talk to both the parents.
You're only hearing one side of the story all the time.
At any given time. So one way that I've tried to understand this a little bit better is by talking to immediate family members, so people who at least are witnessing both the parent and the child. And sometimes those family members do say that this is better for both people.
And these are the bystanders. These are the people watching this family estrangement going on, watching perhaps a sibling go through this. What should bystanders be doing and thinking when this happens in their own family?
I think that it's extremely hard, but I think people's gut reaction is, I need to reconcile them immediately, when that isn't always inherently the best option for both parties. So I think about encouraging people to try to better understand people's perspectives and what it is they want before assuming that they want to be back together.
We're talking right now with Christina Sharp. She studies family estrangement at Utah State University. She's an assistant professor of communication studies. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you ever intentionally distanced yourself from a parent or another family member? Why did you do this? Are you a relative who has experienced estrangement from another loved one? How does this feel? How has social media impacted this estrangement? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Christina, how does social media play into family estrangement or not? Is there an influence from social media?
I think that social media, I mean, anecdotally, can serve in a lot of different functions. Sometimes
adult children, at least, who initiated distance from their parents, talk about how difficult social media is, especially if they have safety concerns. They don't want their parents finding them, which means they have to really monitor their presence on social media. Sometimes, like, there are instances where people, can still stay connected to their family via social media, like, so distance, but I can still kind of see, like, updates in the family. So sometimes social media can be really difficult, and sometimes it really can facilitate, a healthy boundary.
Let's bring in Jim now, who joins us from Oshkosh. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Two quick stories. The first is I more or less kind of estranged myself from my family for a period after high school. Not very long, just 2 months at a time or so. While I was going to college, I just felt I needed a little bit of space and needed to strike out on my own, if you will. So maybe that's a positive example of estrangement. But then on another less positive note, my wife is estranged from her mother and has been so for about 5 years. Due to poor conditions at home, her mother and her did not agree on the goals that my wife set for herself and the career path that she wanted to pursue, including the type of college that she wanted to go to and the amount of work that she wanted to participate in. And ultimately that led to my wife moving out and essentially trying to make it on her own. And at the time, my wife and I had been dating for a period, so she moved in with me, and we had she also got a lot of support from my family. But to this day, my wife has tried to reach out and make amends and via letter, phone call, personal one-on-one conversations, and is really still quite distraught over the fact that she doesn't have a working relationship with her mother anymore. And the fact that we now are married, have two kids, and our kids don't have a relationship with their grandmother or grandfather, for that matter, because of the level of influence that my mother-in-law has over her husband and her family in general. I am pleased to say, though, that my wife does still have a good relationship with all of her siblings and nieces and nephews. So it's simply one relationship that's really melted down.
Jim, thank you so much for explaining these circumstances. And Christina, go ahead.
I'm happy to hear that when you were in college, you were able to get some distance, and that was a healthy situation for you. I'm also sorry to hear that this has been more problematic in your wife's family. I think that it's really countercultural and counterintuitive that families aren't together, right? Because that's what the culture tells us to be, and it's certainly really hard to accept that when one person needs distance, when another person doesn't. And I think that from your wife's perspective, I imagine that even though it was extremely painful, the distance that she was able to create when she was younger really facilitated some of her goals. And it's hard not knowing from your mother-in-law's perspective what the distance she currently is maintaining with your wife, what that's facilitating for her, and whether over time things could be different.
Christina, what happens when the kids are in this relationship? How do you explain family estrangement to children, and do you worry about it becoming cyclical?
So estrangement is something that is often intergenerational. So parents are estranged from their parents and their children and so on. But I think that even within a family, children understand estrangement really differently. So when I talk to immediate family members, sometimes the children say, I'm really glad that this toxic person isn't in our life. And other children say, I can't believe my parent took this relationship away from me, even within the same family. So I think the extent to which parents can talk to their children about the importance of communication and maintaining a healthy relationship and creating a family based on love and communication, I think that's important in understanding what function estrangement is playing in that family.
And then how do you answer these questions when a child says, how long has this been going on, and when will it end? When will this change?
I mean, I guess it depends on how old the child is, and certainly all families are different, but in regard to the question, how long has this been going on, I imagine just telling the child the truth, like my... I haven't had a good relationship with my parent for a really long time, and I'm not sure if that will ever change. But that doesn't influence, you know, how I feel about you.
Jim, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Becky in Wind Lake. Becky, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I am ever so grateful and thankful you guys are having this conversation, because estrangement totally runs in my family on both sides. And I'm going on 3 years of being estranged from my parents. And in the beginning, it was a real sense of abandonment. It wasn't my choice. They were stepping away from the family as a whole, and I was trying so hard to hang on to them because I was under this perceived notion, well, they're your parents. You have to love them. You must get along. They brought you into this world. How could you not love your own parents, or how could they not love you? And over time, they just wanted to keep stepping away through various other situations. I couldn't hang on anymore, and I made that decision to break ties, and it was really, really hard. But as time moved on, it really turned out to be a good thing, because I didn't have to deal with their guilt they put on me, and I didn't have to listen to how they're always the victim when they're not. And the longer I stayed away, the more calm I got, and things were clearer in my family.
Becky, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. We're getting a little bit short on time, and I want to get Christina here to respond. She's describing a continuum of feelings from abandonment to taking action.
You know what? I think that this is the experience that most resonates with the people that I've talked to. Estrangement is hard, even if it's positive, even if the end result is something that creates a more healthy relationship. It's still very painful. Like, parents and children have a shared history, and anytime there's distance, whether it's voluntary or involuntary, there's loss. So it makes a lot of sense that there was a lot of pain in the beginning, even though eventually this turned out to be what sounds like a liberating experience.
We're understanding the complexities of family estrangement this hour, why it happens, and then what solutions are out there with Christina Sharp. She is an assistant professor of communication studies at Utah State University. You can join in with your questions and your stories, 800-642-1234. We'll return after a news update here on the Ideas Network. Do you think reconnection and reconciliation should be the number one goal when it comes to family estrangement? Why or why not? How does social media complicate or ease family estrangement? Some of the questions we are exploring with you this hour on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cherkent. Christina Sharp researches family estrangement as an assistant professor of communication studies at Utah State University. You can join in with your questions, your observations, your solutions at 800-642-1234. Is this conversation hitting home? Tell us about it. You can call in or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Christina, what can families do to get on a path of making estrangement okay, or perhaps even reconciliation?
I think this is a case where it depends on why there's estrangement. So in instances where there's a lot of physical, sexual, psychological abuse, reconciliation might not be the best solution. I think it's important to recognize that what might work for one family might not work for another family. Just because each family is different and the members are different and the way people behave all kind of coalesce into a situation that's unique for each family. I guess one thing I might say is that, or which I encourage people to do, is to not only think of families as people who are biologically and legally tied to you, but also to think about families as the people who behave like a family and who communicate and express affection and engage in positive behaviors that support you.
So in essence, you find a new family, or you make your own family of people who love and support you regardless of their DNA.
Exactly. A lot of people talked about creating a voluntary kin network. So saying, you know what, I might not see my biological parents at the holidays, but I have my own group of people who are my family. And this relationship is a much better one than I was in before.
It's healthy, but can they be an adequate substitute to their true kin?
Well, I would say that if a family is someone who loves and supports you, then there's nothing about biology that necessitates that people do that. And I think that's one of the hardest things to think about estrangement, that not all parents love their children, and not all children love their parents, which is, very counterintuitive. But from my experience and the research that I do, there shouldn't be a reason why a family that you create for yourself couldn't absolutely fulfill the people's needs of a family. In some cases, they might even be able to fulfill it better.
What about going to therapy? What about reaching out perhaps to that family member and saying, can we go to therapy? Can we talk through this?
You know what? I absolutely believe that therapy can be a really powerful tool, and so do the people who go to therapy and find the right therapist. In some instances, I think that's probably an excellent and viable solution. In some instances, it's not. So, for example, a young child, right, who's in an abusive situation, it's not like they can say, you know what, Mom, Dad, we need to go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just depends, again, on the specific situation, but certainly as an adult, depending on what the problem is, therapy could be an excellent solution to helping families change some of their patterns or create more healthy boundaries.
What about family members who turn into mediators, who turn into messengers, if you will?
I think that's a very difficult situation to be in. Oftentimes, the people who found themselves in that situation put a stop to it pretty quickly. So when I talk to immediate family members, no one likes being caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, someone will eventually take a side.
So why then do they stop, though? They don't like being in the middle, but they also realize that they are, in essence, trying to continue communication between two parties. And these are two people that they both love. So why do they step away?
I'm not exactly sure why they step away, but in some instances, them stepping away could be an opportunity for change. So when two people are in a conflict, a third party rarely is going to facilitate that change because the change needs to happen between the two people who have the conflict. Even if a third party might be able to create some peace for a little while, it's more likely they're covering up deeper problems that if the two people can't solve together, then the same patterns are just going to repeat over and over again. My colleague Claire Canfield actually talks about this. He has a TED Talk called The Beauty of Conflict, where he talks about how conflict isn't inherently bad. It's an opportunity for people to have their needs met when they're not.
Are there other tips that you can share for families who are trying to work through family estrangement? And also how to prevent this from happening in one's own family?
One of the things I like to talk to my students about in particular is this idea of relational maintenance needs to happen in all of our relationships. And we can't assume that our families are going to be with us forever. So I think that when we consider the possibility that we might not have a good family relationship, it encourages us more to maintain that relationship and engage in the same type of maintenance behaviors we might with a friend or a romantic partner.
So you can't take the family for granted? You can't just take it for granted that it'll be there?
Exactly. In economics, there's something called moral hazard, and it's this idea that when people have insurance, they engage in more risky behaviors. And this often happens in our relationships, where we think that because of our blood ties or our legal ties, we have some sort of insurance to treat people in a more risky way or in a way that we wouldn't treat a friend or a stranger. Oftentimes, my students tell me this all the time, that they treat their family members way worse than they would a coworker or another friend.
So the coworker and the other friend, what advice would you give to them who perhaps witness estrangement or see it happening in their own lives or in their own workplace or in their life?
I think I would encourage people to seek understanding without judgment. So I think one of the biggest struggles for people is that their network doesn't understand and they already have assumed that it's bad. So instead of saying, I'm so sorry that this has happened without any context, asking people, how do you feel about this distance? Is this something good for you? What could I do to support you?
Do you feel like sometimes the bystander also rushes to the conclusion that pities the person who has been severed from, the person on the other end who didn't push away this relationship?
Sure. I think everyone needs a different type of support. And this can be absolutely, people talk about being distanced, like oftentimes it's parents, talk about it feeling like death, like absolutely an extremely painful situation, in which case I would definitely recommend they seek professional counseling.
Let's bring in Christina in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, my dad said relationships are built one brick at a time, And without this, they crumble. And I consider a phone call, a card, a text, all of those are bricks that bring families together, families, friendships, relationships.
Christina, thanks so much for the call. And Christina Sharp, one brick at a time.
I mean, absolutely. There are extremely healthy behaviors and rituals that families have that help keep them together, sharing family stories that are really functional and help create a family identity. I think that it just sometimes, certainly that's the ideal, but like a lot of families have issues that are hard to see and don't necessarily always operate that way.
Where does your research head next?
Right now I'm working with one of my colleagues at Utah State, Tim Curran. He and I are looking at how to measure estrangement in hopes that we can look at some of the outcomes. So right now, like I mentioned before, most of the research has been qualitative. So interviews and accounts from people, online stories. But he and I are really looking to see how estrangement might be related to things like mental health issues, like depression and anxiety.
And once you can make it more quantitative, will that bring more breakthroughs in estrangement?
I mean, we hope so. I mean, now that we kind of, I think the qualitative was really important for us in understanding what estrangement was so we could measure it well. We absolutely hope that once we are able to quantify this, that people might understand in a different way how severe and distressing this can be for people.
Christina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Christina Sharp is an assistant professor of communication studies and director of the Family Communication and Relationships Lab at Utah State University. Her study, published in June in the journal Communication Research, is titled "You're Not Welcome Here: A Grounded Theory of Family Distancing." This hour of the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.